Chapter 22 The Poacher.
"I didn't do this," I told Marge.
"Sure you didn't," she sneered. "You're just sitting here at the scene of the crime, surrounded by half-eaten food, with a piece of red-hot evidence in your hand."
She snatched the pink-sprinkled chocolate cupcake from me and held it in front of my nose.
"This time I've got you and you're not getting away."
"Marge," I said, "I know who the rhino poacher is. But we're running out of time. If you let me go..."
"Shut your trap," Marge interrupted. "I'm not falling for that hooey. I'm not as big an idiot as you think."
She clapped one of the handcuffs around my wrist. "Marge, look around you," I argued. "Do you really think I ate all this food by myself?"
"Maybe."
Obviously, using logic wasn't going to work, so I went with Plan B. I stomped on Marge's toe as hard as I could. I'd hoped that the sudden pain would make her release my arm. Instead, it only made her scream like a banshee right in my ear, and then she got mad.
"You little toad," she snarled. "You're in for it now."
She tried to grab my other wrist and cuff it while I did my best to get away. Unfortunately, Marge was much bigger and stronger than I was. She quickly overpowered me, slamming me chest first onto a table and wrenching my arms behind my back. She was so busy cuffing me, she didn't notice that Pancake had emerged from the kitchen. The orangutan was watching us from behind the counter. He knew me, but he didn't know Marge, and he didn't like what Marge was doing to me. Marge clicked the handcuffs around my other wrist. "Marge," I said, "you better let me go right now."
"Or what?"
she said snidely. "Or you're going to be attacked by an orangutan." Rather than back off, Marge got even rougher with me. She flipped me onto my back and thumped a meaty finger into my chest.
"I told you to shut your trap, Teddy. So help me, if you say one more word, I'll smack your fibbing mouth right off your face."
With that, she raised a hand, as though she was thinking of striking me anyhow. Pancake sprang over the counter, landing on the floor beside us, and grabbed Marge's arm. Marge reared back in surprise. From the blank, uncomprehending look on her face, I could tell she didn't understand what was going on. Instead of realizing that the very orangutan whom I'd explained had caused all the trouble was right there at the scene of the crime, she seemed to be under the impression that it had appeared out of nowhere and interfered with my arrest. Anyone who knew anything about orangutans, or any animals at all, would have known not to antagonize it. Marge did exactly the opposite.
"Let me go, you stupid monkey," she shouted, "or I'll arrest you for assaulting an officer."
Pancake's lips curled back in a snarl, revealing a set of sharp teeth that put Baba Booney's to shame. The color drained from Marge's face so quickly, it looked as though she'd been bleached. Now it occurred to her that Pancake might be dangerous. Marge got lucky. If Pancake had wanted to, he probably could have torn Marge's arms out of their sockets, or crushed the bones of her wrist with one squeeze. Instead, he simply picked up a banana cream pie and smashed it right into Marge's face. Given that he was an orangutan, though, he did it quite hard. Marge sailed backward, smashing into a cake display, which promptly collapsed on her. A dozen cakes tumbled out, each splatting all over her. A triple-decker chocolate cake plopped right onto her head. Marge screamed and staggered back to her feet, blinded by icing, spluttering banana cream. I spotted the key to the handcuffs dangling from her belt. "Pancake," I said, "get the keys." As I'd guessed, an orangutan who'd spent so much time trying to get out of his cage knew exactly what keys were. Pancake grinned and pounced.
"Keep your mitts off me,"
Marge yelled. She tried to run but slipped in a slick of icing and went down again, this time face-planting into a donut rack. Dozens of the pastries exploded on impact, splattering the walls with raspberry jam and Bavarian cream. Pancake hooted happily, as though he found the entire thing hilarious. While Marge writhed on the floor, the orangutan deftly plucked the key off her belt. I turned around, showing the cuffs on my wrists to Pancake. "Now unlock these." Pancake looked at the handcuffs curiously, then the key. Then he turned his attention to the donuts and started cramming them in his mouth. It had been expecting a bit too much for him to unlock me. He was only an orangutan, after all. "Okay, just give me the key," I said, thrusting my hands toward him with the palms open. Pancake happily plunked the key into my hands, then squirted the raspberry filling from a donut down his throat. With my hands behind my back, I couldn't unlock my cuffs or phone anyone, so I simply ran from the bakery looking for help. Marge lurched into my path in a desperate last-ditch attempt to stop me. She had so much icing in her face she couldn't even see me. Her hair was shellacked with chocolate. Two frosted donuts were stuck where her eyes normally would have been, giving the impression that she was wearing oversized glasses.
"Stop!" she ordered. "You're under arrest!"
Pancake barreled into her, knocking her down once more. This time Marge landed on her rear in a pile of cherry pies, which made a sickening squelch beneath her bottom. Marge roared in disgust and frustration. I raced into the park. Pancake stuffed a few more pastries into his mouth and followed me. He had a chocolate eclair dangling from his lips like a cigar. Marge howled after me,
"This isn't over between us, Teddy. I'll get you one of these days."
Bizarrely, this was the second time I'd run through Fun Jungle with my hands cuffed behind my back. The first time it happened while investigating the disappearance of Kazoo the koala, so I already knew that it wasn't easy. As I raced through the park, I looked around for someone who could uncuff me. A low rumble echoed, so deep I could feel it in my bones. I froze, recognizing the sound. It was the purr of a happy elephant. Though most people think that elephants usually vocalize by trumpeting, they actually use lower tones much more often, including ultrasound, which is so low that humans can't even hear it. These tones can carry great distances, allowing elephants miles apart to communicate with one another. Their happy purring sounded a lot like a cat's, if the cat weighed 4 tons. I hopped onto a nearby bench, looking for the elephants. Pancake sat next to me and noisily slurped the cream filling out of his eclair. I spotted the backs of the elephants above some landscaping near Shark Odyssey. Apparently, Pete Thwacker had been successful in getting them to resume their morning walks. They were heading toward us, just beginning their loop at the park. I ran after them, and Pancake joined in the chase.
"Bonnie!"
I yelled, figuring the head keeper would be out with them.
"Help!"
"Teddy?"
I heard her respond. I cut around behind the landscaping to find Bonnie at the front of the herd. I'm not sure which startled her more, the fact that I was handcuffed or that I was accompanied by a chocolate-smeared orangutan.
"What happened to you?"
she asked. I tried to explain as quickly as possible. "Pancake escaped and broke into the bakery, but Marge thought I did it and tried to arrest me. We escaped, and I know who shot at the rhino, so I need my hands free." Bonnie didn't question any of this. At Fun Jungle, bizarre events were starting to become commonplace.
"Do you have the key?"
"In my hand." Bonnie quickly took it from me and unlocked one of the cuffs, freeing my arms. Time was so precious, I couldn't even wait for her to unlock the other. I simply took the key back from her and started running again.
"Thanks," I cried. "Need me to do anything else?"
Bonnie yelled after me.
"Call Chief Honecker," I shouted back. "Tell him to meet me at Atmani's office."
Pancake sprang off the bench and bounded along beside me, enjoying our romp through the park. I fished my phone out of my pocket, speed-dialed my father, and told him to call Mom and meet me at Atmani's office as well. He had lots of questions, but there wasn't time to answer them, and I needed to save my breath.
"It's urgent," I told him. "Just meet me there."
"Will do," said Dad. I hauled through the rest of the park as fast as I could. I tried to unlock the remaining handcuff en route, but I couldn't do it while running, so I crammed the key in my pocket instead. The administration building was on the opposite side of Fun Jungle from where I'd started, so it was a long run. I was nearly exhausted by the time I got there. Pancake seemed to be too, although maybe he was nauseated from exercising so much on a stomach full of pastries.
"Teddy!"
Mom yelled. She was at the door of the administration building, waiting for me.
"You found Pancake, too!"
"Yeah," I panted. "He was in the bakery."
"Pancake," Mom chided. "You've been a bad boy." Pancake grinned in response, revealing plenty of chocolate frosting jammed in the gaps between his teeth. He followed us right into the main lobby of the administration building. The guard posted at the desk snapped to his feet in astonishment.
You can't bring a monkey in here."
"It's an ape," Mom corrected, "and he escaped his exhibit. Call Monkey Mountain and have a keeper come over to get him right away, and keep a close eye on him in the meantime. J.J. McCracken doesn't want him getting away again." While we passed through the metal detector, Pancake vaulted over the security desk and plopped into the guard's chair. There was a bowl of candy on the desk, and despite the fact that he'd recently eaten several pounds of cake, he went to work on this as well.
"Hey,"
the guard snapped.
That's for humans!
Before he could protest that we were leaving him with an orangutan, we ducked into the elevator. Normally we would have run up the stairs, but Mom couldn't handle them well on her crutches.
Where's Dad?
I asked. Already here, Mom said, and Honecker is too.
Great.
We emerged onto the third floor and raced down to Atmani's office. His door was open. As Mom had said, Dad and Chief Honecker were waiting, along with Atmani. Dad gave me a hug as I arrived. Honecker gave me a scowl.
This better be good, he said. We've been here all night. I was about to go home and finally get some sleep.
You know who tried to shoot the rhinos?
Atmani asked curiously.
Yes,
I said.
You did.
All the adults reacted with astonishment, as though I'd done something terribly offensive, like made a rude noise in church. Even Atmani.
Me? Is this a joke?
He did such a good job of acting confused that for a moment I actually doubted myself. But then I looked down at the floor of his office. As I'd remembered, the carpet was still covered with tiny shavings from his sculptures, little flakes and curls. The moment I saw them, I knew I was right. He wasn't trying to kill the rhinos, I explained to the others. He was only trying to make us think someone was trying to kill them, so that we'd cut the horns off. Atmani laughed as though this was ridiculous.
Oh, goodness me, Teddy. I thought you were going to be serious. We all know the hunter was a woman.
No, I said. The hunter was you. You wore a wig to throw us off your trail, along with doing a whole lot of other things. Atmani started to protest again, but Honecker held up a hand, silencing him.
Let the kid talk.
Oh, come now, Atmani cried. You can't possibly believe this nonsense.
I'm at least going to listen to it, Honecker told him. McCracken's forcing me to work with Teddy, so let's hear what he has to say. If it's crazy, you've got nothing to worry about, right?
I suppose.
Atmani rolled his eyes in annoyance and sullenly leaned against his desk. Honecker turned back to me.
For your sake, this better not be a big waste of our time.
It won't be, I said, and then launched into my explanation. There were a bunch of things that kept bothering me about the hunter's behavior through all this. Why did the hunter not use a silencer the first time? Why did the hunter climb over the back fence so close to the camera? Why did the hunter go after a rhino inside a building instead of a rhino out in the open? No real hunter would do things like that. A real hunter would try to make sure we didn't know he was here. But what if the hunter wanted us to think he was going after the rhino? Then all those things made sense. The morning of the elephant stampede, the reason we heard a rifle without a silencer was because Atmani wanted us to hear it.
How could I have fired the rifle? Atmani asked. I was with you and the elephants when it went off.
Honecker spun toward me, annoyed that I'd overlooked this. Even Mom and Dad looked concerned by the flaw in my logic. He triggered it remotely, I told them, so that he'd have an alibi. Dad, the other day you said you could set up a remote system to do almost anything. Could you make one fire a rifle?
I suppose, Dad said thoughtfully. Setting up a wireless control system is quite easy. You could even control it with a smartphone. But rigging a machine to depress the trigger on a rifle would be a little more difficult.
It could be done, though, Honecker said. I've seen setups before. They use hydraulics to pull the trigger.
Well, Atmani did something like that, I said. He set the rifle up close to Fun Jungle, probably in the woods, then made it go off when he was with all of us to give himself the alibi, and to frighten us all into thinking there was a real hunter around.
But the bullet went through the window of the rhino house, Atmani exclaimed. Are you honestly saying that I set up a rifle to make that difficult a shot remotely?
No, I replied. You'd already taken the shot at Rhonda much earlier. Only you used a silencer then, so no one would hear. You missed her on purpose, but made sure there was plenty of evidence of an attack. Then, at Rhonda's house later, you pointed out the bullet in the wall to us, and we all simply assumed it had been fired from the gun we'd heard. That's why you shot at Rhonda, rather than a rhino that was outside. Because a bullet in the wall would be easy to see and would make it obvious that someone was specifically going after the rhinos. But that didn't convince everyone to cut the horns off yet. So you tried again. This time you climbed over the back fence. And even though there were plenty of places where there were no cameras, you came over right by one to make sure it filmed you. To throw us off the scent, though, you wore a wig to make it look like a woman was the hunter.
And I suppose you're going to say that I purposefully allowed you all to see me out in Safariland as well, Atmani chided. No, I said. That was an accident. I think you were going to take another shot at Rhonda, this time from close range, to worry us even more. That's why you brought a silencer that time, because you didn't want the shot to alert security while you were on the property. Only we happened to see you. But that actually worked out for you, because it was even more proof there was a hunter on the loose. However, Doc still refused to cut the horns off, so you made one more attempt to convince us all the rhinos were in serious danger. Since security was now amped up in the park, you had to shoot from World of Reptiles. I'll bet that this time you actually planned to hit Rhonda, not to kill her or anything, but to wound her so we know you meant business. But then Summer and I stumbled across you. You didn't end up shooting at the rhino, but it didn't matter. You had finally created enough evidence to convince JJ the rhinos should all be dehorned. And what would be the point of all this? Atmani asked. I didn't steal the horns. They're locked in JJ McCracken's safe. No, they're not, I said. The ones in the safe are fakes. Mom, Dad, and Honecker gasped in surprise at this. Atmani didn't. He flinched, but then he quickly did his best to pretend that he hadn't. What are you talking about? The pink stuff I found in the rhino house that you said was clay wasn't clay. It was dental alginate. Dentists use it to make molds of teeth and stuff. But according to the internet, sculptors use it too. You're a sculptor. If you took a mold of a rhino horn, I'll bet you could make a copy of it that looked exactly like the real one. I sculpt stone, Atmani said, pointing to the Shona sculptures in his office. A rhino horn made out of stone would weigh 40 pounds and wouldn't look a bit like the real thing. You didn't make the fakes out of stone. I bent and picked one of the curled bits off the carpet. As I'd suspected, it wasn't stone at all. It was plastic. You made it out of this, right here in this office. Stone doesn't curl, but plastic does, and the right kind of plastic probably looks and feels exactly like rhino horn, or at least close enough to allow you time to get away with the real ones. Honecker took the curl of plastic from my hands and examined it closely. Then he looked at Atmani suspiciously. Oh, come on now, Atmani cried. This is even crazier than I suspected. Remote-controlled rifles and fake rhino horns. These are the inventions of a boy with an overactive imagination.
You were the one who delivered the horns to McCracken's safe, Honecker said suspiciously. In fact, you volunteered to do it. No one was with you during that time. You could easily have stopped by here on the way, swapped the real ones for the fakes, and then delivered those to McCracken's office.
I could have, but I didn't, Atmani said flatly. I have done nothing but try to protect those rhinos.
You've been arguing for dehorning them harder than anyone else, Honecker replied.
To protect them, Atmani argued back, from a poacher who is still out there while you entertain ridiculous stories from a meddlesome boy.
It wouldn't be hard to check out Teddy's story, Mom said. All we'd have to do is have JJ open the safe and examine the horns left inside.
Honecker nodded, then turned to Atmani.
I think that makes sense, though you'll be staying right here until we get to the bottom of this.
I'm afraid that won't be happening, someone said.
Hondo stood in the doorway, his gun aimed at us.
Get the horns, he told Atmani. Looks like it's time for us to go.